Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC. I'm pleased to be joined by Carol Huynh, a practicing clinical pharmacist and manager of clinical outcomes at Shields Health Solutions, a specialty pharmacy accelerator. Today, among various items on the agenda, she'll be discussing ways to address undertreated side effects that can form as a result of having a specialty condition, including the use of an adapted care model. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Carol.
LabVantage Solutions is a global leader in enterprise laboratory software solutions that improve customer outcomes by transforming data into knowledge. Its intelligent LIMS platform features advanced analytics, state-of-the-art AI, and mixed reality technologies that enable revolutionary advances in the pharmaceutical industry by drawing greater insights from broad data sets. For more information, visit labvantage.com.
Carol, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the show today. I really do appreciate the time.
Thanks, Nico. I'm excited to be here.
So having a specialty condition such as cancer, hemophilia, Parkinson's disease is difficult enough to deal with on its own, but it can also cause an undertreated side effect, such as worsens mental health. In your experience as a clinical pharmacist, could you describe what you've witnessed and heard from HCPs in this regard?
So when we're talking about the topic of mental health, it's already a complex topic in itself for patients who do not have complex medical conditions. But when you add on that mental health in addition to complex medical conditions, it brings an extra layer of complexity. One of the things that we noticed is when patients are diagnosed with Parkinson or cancer or something that's life-changing, they express a sense of loneliness. This is a new condition for them. They also express that they feel like a burden. So when they go to the doctor, they don't feel as though they can talk about these type of mental health concerns or in general feelings, given that they feel like they're a burden to the healthcare provider and that the provider is too busy to talk about these type of things. And what is one thing that really stands out for us is when a patient expresses a sense of loss of self. And so what I mean by that is a patient who, for example, used to like to read, right? They like to read. Reading is a huge component of their life, but now they start these medications that cause nausea or makes them really tired. So they don't have the ability to do the things they like anymore, and they have to readjust with all of that. When that type of impact happens day to day, they lose their sense of identity, their sense of self-worth. And what I mean by self-worth is what they were able to do. They maybe have been able to have a job, been able to take care of their families, but now those roles have shifted. So those are some of the topics that hit home for us when we're talking about mental health. So we really try to hone in on the component of providing patients that space to really just talk about, you know, what's potentially life-changing for them and how we can support them through this life-changing process.
Yeah, thank you for that. And when we were looking into you coming on the show, this was an interesting topic for us because I feel like these repercussions and these problems and this depression that occurs among patients, it really, I don't want to say it goes unnoticed, but just it's not really spoken of for whatever reason it is. You just don't hear about it as often as you should. So it is very fascinating. Now, this adapted care model, which for the listeners, it sees Shields working with a network of health systems to help specialty pharmacists identify patients who are at risk for the depression you were referring to, Carol. Could you kind of get into, I guess, the history behind it? Like, how did that model come about? And how are you all and like how are your partners working together to accomplishing the goal of helping to solve this problem?
Thank you for that question. So it actually kind of go right back into what we talked about, right? So our care model at the end of the day, we try to do risk assessment based on, you know, the condition, based on the patient's environment, based on the medication they're taking, and really identify and screen for a specific risk with depression and mental health. That's one component of it. But the bigger component of this is really getting to know the patient and having that space to talk to them. After talking to them, and let's say for taking an example with our adaptive care model and our integrated care model, once we see the patients, we work with the doctors, we kind of know the general background of everything that's going on. What we do with that information is we then identify a risk with that patient. what we do is when we speak with the patient, we can navigate our conversations a little bit better to potentially touch on these topics a little bit more. For example, if the medication causes risk for depression, or if the, let's say, for instance, oncology patient, they're already at high levels of stress, they are at high level of anxiety. And from previous experience, you know, we've seen that the roles change, therefore just inducing more of that lack of self-worth, that how they would say, or a sense of loss of identity. Because those are so common, we change our care model to kind of adapt those type of screening questions and really getting to know the patients before we start initiating those conversations. When we first talk to the patient, we don't really bring any of these topics up. We actually just talk to them, get to know them, get to know their day-to-day lives, get to know what they like to do for fun, get to know what they do for work, if they still work, you know. As time builds up, we monitor the medication. As the medication starts to work, which is the primary thing we want to see, and there's this sense of the patient's a little bit more comfortable and has a little bit more bandwidth to talk about other things, right? That they can, you know, decrease their worry of that medication working. Once that is developed, and once we determine the medication is working by monitoring it, that's when we start hitting on topics like, you know, how's your day-to-day life now with that medication? We know this medication causes side effects. So how's that doing for you? Have you noticed a change in your mood with this medication? And then we ask them things like, what do you like to do for fun? Are you still able to do that? And that's how we get into the topic of mental health. And that's kind of how our care model is. It's quite flexible and fluid and personalized based on the patient's needs.
I like that. So it's essentially kind of, it's easing into it. You know, you can't, I guess you can't really jump into something like that, jump into it blindly. So I'm curious, how's the feedback from the perspective of both the providers and the patients? What kind of feedback or results have you guys gotten in terms of tackling these side effects? What's been the overall consensus on that?
From both a provider and patient perspective, what we've gotten is a level of gratitude and a relationship building component of it. In terms of patients themselves, they actually express gratitude at the most, and then they are more open and receptive. They didn't realize that pharmacists or healthcare providers can provide this level of help, especially in our older population. I feel like mental health is still a stigma. And expressing feelings is a stigma. So when you have pharmacists coming in who really want to focus on this, that component of providing them the right resources at the right time, and then also building that relationship with them to help them feel comfortable to speak about this is important. That gratitude of knowing that these resources exist, the time and space for someone to talk openly exists. And then when we talk about more open and receptive, it goes back to that trust component, which is then they will give us a call when they're not feeling well. Or for example, you know, like, hey, I no longer can work and I feel as though I need to do something and I can't just sit at home all day. And this is really causing frustration. Do you have any resources for this? Do you have any mental health referrals for this? We have our patients over time giving us calls and really talking about mental health and so forth and what resources are available. So what we try to do when we hear from them is over time, as we're initiating and monitoring them over time, is they express clarity, acceptance, and they're empowered by their conditions. So let's take back the patient who likes to read, right? Maybe they can't read anymore, but we somehow incorporate Tai Chi into their day, or we incorporate chess playing into day-to-day, or we develop a way for them to take more naps and medication of what time they like to read so we can reschedule the dosing and so forth. So there's a sense of empowerment that the condition is not taking over or controlling their life. And in terms of provider, it's more so gratitude and trust, in the sense of the gratitude that we're able to provide this time and space for the patient to talk, and getting that information to the doctor, the risk assessment information to the doctor in real time so they can actually intervene. They absolutely care. But as you can see, you know, when you're in the hospital setting, it's not the most comfortable place to be. Even if you want it and you trust your doctor, it's just there's so much going on. Someone's pulling labs on you and someone's pulling this and telling you to go here. There's no way you're going to be in tune with those feelings or even being able to listen to what's going on to really process that. So you need time. And that time means sitting at home and thinking about it.
And it sounds to me like you're providing that personal connection with the patients, which I feel like it kind of flies under the radar. Not everyone thinks of that right off the bat. So it's definitely something important to keep in mind. And this integrated care model that you've been talking about, Carol, how do you think it helps set a precedent now as we look into the future? How does that kind of lay the groundwork for what you think could be to come here?
I think the primary part of being an integrated care model is that sense of transparency we have across all teams. I think one of the primary problems we have with any healthcare right now is not being able to see patients as a whole. So when you go to the primary care doctor have no idea what's going on at, you know, in the oncology clinic and so forth. Being part of that integrated care model, that curtain is taken off and we can see what the exact treatment is and what the patient has been doing and so forth and connecting those components. Continuing to have that integrated care model, being part of a multidisciplinary team and building trust across all of the providers. So meaning pharmacists, physicians, nutritionists, social workers, having that transparency and integrating that way is always going to be the number one thing. Being able to get our databases to communicate in real time is also super important, right? Having someone, to me personally, I believe in a universal health system where we can share data across the network. Let's say, for instance, if my patient who's expressed anxiety and depression and have went to the primary care doctor and they provided them this medication, how do I get that information quickly to the oncologist just in case it does impact their oncology medication or have a drug-drug interaction? Instead of waiting, you know, for that follow-up appointment with the oncologist to let him know that medication can potentially interact after monitoring their lab levels. Something in that nature. So having that transparency is important. Another component of this is leveraging the data we have now with the platforms we have. We collect so much data. So at some point, I feel like we need to kind of look into this data set and really see what's working, how do we improve that, and what type of new opportunities and programs can we use with our data set that we're collecting across all of the network. And that can range from a basic depression screening. That can even range from the age of the patient, the race of the patient. There's so many complex factors that data we are collecting, so we can customize and continue to personalize our care model in this integrated space.
That'll be interesting to see what happens, how easily that data can be shared and communicated, you know, among the different departments. Definitely sounds promising as to what you said, Carol. So we'll keep an eye out to see how that's achieved and everything. But thank you very much for coming on the show. I certainly learned a lot today. I'm sure the listeners will kind of gather that same kind of sentiment about this issue, as I mentioned earlier, that often does go underreported or underexplained rather. So thanks for taking the time today, Carol. We really do appreciate it. And I know our listeners will learn quite a bit from the episode today. So I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Vico.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.